Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Russia's Sputnik Radio. We'll begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The new security law in Hong Kong imposed by China came into effect on Wednesday, with demonstrations and arrests following. In Russia, an election on constitutional change, which could allow Putin to run for 2 more terms, won by an overwhelming majority. NHK Japan.
Hong Kong's new national security law imposed by China has already been put in practice, with the territory's police confirming 10 people were arrested under the law. The first arrest came Wednesday afternoon, when this man displayed an independence flag as crowds marked 23 years since handover from British rule. About 360 others were also detained for unauthorized assembly, disorderly conduct, and other offenses. Protesters took to the streets to voice their opposition to the law. The new legislation lays out 4 criminal acts it says endangers national security: secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign or external forces. Violators could face life in prison. Protesters are appealing to the international community for help. The United States and the United Kingdom are hearing those calls, and both countries are backing up their condemnation of the law with policy changes towards Hong Kong.
The United States is deeply concerned about the law's sweeping provisions and the safety of everyone living in the territory, including Americans. This is outrageous and an affront to all nations.
Speaking to reporters on Wednesday, Pompeo said President Donald Trump wants to ensure that, with a handful of exceptions, Hong Kong is treated just like mainland China, because that's the way President Xi Jinping has chosen to treat the territory. The British government announced on Wednesday that those with a British national overseas passport will be allowed to live and work in the country for 5 years. After that, they will be allowed to apply for citizenship.
We will not look the other way when it comes to Hong Kong, and we will not duck our historic responsibilities to its people.
Britain's Foreign Office says about 350,000 Hong Kong citizens currently hold such passports, but the figure could grow to 2.9 million if their families and others who are eligible are added. Meanwhile, the last British governor of Hong Kong is lashing out at China for its actions.
What I think we should do is work with our allies, Australia, Canada, the United States, Europe, Japan, all of which have denounced what's happening in Hong Kong.
Chris Patton told Britain's Sky News that the concept of one country, two systems and Hong Kong's high degree of autonomy have been overturned and replaced by, quote, a sort of Orwellian law. Russian President Vladimir Putin is set to win overwhelming approval by voters for a constitutional change that will enable him to potentially stay in power until 2036. The reform Putin proposed in January would reset his term limits to 0 in 2024, allowing him to serve 2 more 6-year terms. The reform also include a ban on same-sex marriage and broadening the powers of parliament. With 99% of votes counted, 78% were in favor and 21% against. An exit poll and other data also show overwhelming support for the changes. The president said in an interview on state-run TV in June that he didn't rule out the possibility of running for office again if the constitution were to be revised. A former KGB intelligence officer, Putin has effectively governed Russia for 2 decades. Opposition members have said he is trying to become a president for life. And we are joined now by Matsuo Hiroshi, our chief correspondent in Moscow. Hiroshi, just how important would you say this national vote was for Putin and his future?
There was a lot of government promotion. This was a single yes-no vote for a number of changes, including increasing the minimum wage and the value of pensions. People had a week to cast ballots, some even voting in polling stations made from tents and buses. Several local election committees held a special contest, giving voters a chance to win a smartphone or a car. But experts are divided over whether Putin will actually run again. For now, he has only 4 more years in office, and he doesn't want to be seen as a lame duck. Some say he wants to transfer power to his successor, while hinting at a possible candidacy or a new post. A Russian political expert I spoke with doesn't buy that.
Putin still has no successor. He himself is his successor. He only believes in himself, so it's reasonable to assume that Putin will run in the 2024 election.
Okay, thank you, Hiroshi. That was a report from Matsuo Hiroshi, our chief correspondent in Moscow.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. They have altered their schedule and format and are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 5975-7245 and 11970, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. A brief summary of COVID cases in the global south. The Lebanese president has censored Washington's direct interference in Lebanese domestic affairs. Iran has issued an arrest warrant for Trump and a dozen others who carried out the drone strike on an Iranian general in Iraq and has asked Interpol to assist in their capture. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Coronavirus cases are continuing to increase across the global south. In India, the number of COVID-19 cases has topped 500,000. The peak of the pandemic is expected to be weeks away. Health officials there warn that the number of cases in India could top 1 million by the beginning of July. Iran has ordered residents to wear masks indoors at gathering places. Over the weekend, Iran reported 127 deaths, its highest daily toll in 3 months. Meanwhile, Australia is reporting its biggest jump in COVID-19 cases in 2 months. Lebanese President Michel Aoun has censored Washington's direct interference in the internal affairs of Lebanon against the backdrop of comments by U.S. Ambassador to Beirut, Dori Shay. The Americans are directly interfering in Lebanese domestic affairs. This is unacceptable, said the Lebanese president in an exclusive interview with the Beirut-based Arabic language Al Mayan news agency on the weekend. He cautioned the U.S. envoy over making more remarks against the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, emphasizing that the group represents the Lebanese society and enjoys popularity among the people of Lebanon. Earlier in the day, Lebanon's foreign minister, Nassef Hitti, summoned Shea over her anti-Hezbollah criticism. The U.S. offers a $10 million reward for information on a senior commander of the Lebanese resistance movement of Hezbollah. The Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations, in an international treaty, defines a framework for diplomatic relations between countries, and they were reminded that under the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations of 1961, an ambassador must not interfere in the domestic affairs of another country. Iran has issued an arrest warrant and asked Interpol to help detain U.S. President Donald Trump and dozens of others in the United States who carried out the drone strike that killed a top Iranian general in Baghdad earlier this year. Tehran prosecutor Ali Al-Qasimir said on Monday that Trump, along with more than 30 others that Iran accuses of involvement in the January 3rd attack that killed General Qasem Soleimani, face murder and terrorism charges. The prosecutor did not identify anyone else sought other than Donald Trump, but said that Iran would continue to pursue his prosecution even after Trump's presidency ends. Interpol, based in France, did not immediately respond to the request for comment. The Iranian prosecutor is also quoted as saying that Iran had requested a red notice be put up for Trump and the others, the highest level notice issued by Interpol, requesting that seeks the location and arrest of the individual named. The U.S. president openly admitted killing General Soleimani, who oversaw the Revolutionary Guard Corps Expeditionary Quads Force and others in the January attack near Baghdad International Airport.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, and their download links are fixed and working great most days. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. The European Union announced the opening of its external borders to 14 countries, not including the United States. A series of short reports on the global spread of the coronavirus. As the Israeli cabinet debates the annexation of several Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank, a report from a Palestinian village. Greenpeace activists are protesting the slow approach to Germany's phasing out of coal burning. France held local elections, and Green candidate victories showed a national disillusion with President Macron's policies. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The European Union has announced it will reopen its external borders to 14 countries from the 1st of July. The United States has been excluded from the list as the coronavirus infection rates continue to rise in parts of the country. China has been provisionally approved, though travel will only open up if Beijing lifts all restrictions against European citizens.
The World Health Organization is warning that the pandemic is speeding up. It has again stressed that contact tracing is the most important way for countries to control outbreaks of COVID-19. With Latin America's currently the world's worst hit region, the WHO has warned the death toll there could reach nearly 500,000 by October. It's forecasting that regional giant Brazil is still weeks from reaching a peak in its first wave. And concern is growing in the U.S. state of California over a massive outbreak at the state's oldest prison. Over 1,000 inmates are now infected with the virus at San Quentin near San Francisco. It's one of the worst hotspots, driving a surging infection rate in the country's most populous state. Donors at a huge online bidding event have pledged more than $7 billion to help Syrian refugees. But the United Nations had hoped to raise $10 billion for its aid programs in the war-torn country. Aid groups are warning that's not enough, with millions of Syrians at risk of starvation.
The Israeli cabinet is poised to debate the annexation of several Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank. The move is likely to inflame tensions with the Palestinians and hamper any future peace negotiations over the territory, the status of the territory. Now, Beit Iska is a Palestinian enclave in the West Bank, just outside of Jerusalem, and completely surrounded by the village of Israeli settlers. Soon, this settler land could become part of Israel. The Palestinians say that would be unacceptable. Tanya Kramer reports.
This tunnel road leads to the Palestinian village of Beit Iksa, next to the security barrier that separates Israel from the occupied West Bank. At this particular spot, the fence of the Israeli barrier was built around a house belonging to one Palestinian family. The Rayebs live in this almost unique enclave right next to a Jewish settlement. The entrance gate and cameras are remotely monitored. Like other Palestinians, Sadat Rayeb wonders what will happen to his home if the settlement becomes officially part of Israel, a move based on the controversial U.S. peace proposal put forth in January.
I consider the annexation that we're hearing about to be a show of American and Israeli arrogance in order to confiscate more land. The Israeli and American governments just want the land, but without the people.
So far, Israel hasn't presented any official maps to explain which areas it could annex first and where the lines would be drawn. Raib is concerned that the move could lead to yet more isolation and further restrictions on movement, especially since the Trump plan envisions only limited enclaves for the Palestinians.
There's no future. There's no hope. My hopes are gone because of the support we see for the Israelis. Nobody cares about us Palestinians at all.
Movement between different parts of the occupied West Bank is already very complicated for Palestinians.
So now we also want to go to the settlement. It's just literally a meter away from us. But to get there, we have to drive to the nearest checkpoint, and it will take us some time.
It's more than an hour's drive to cross the Qalandia checkpoint near Ramallah. Only Palestinians with an Israeli permit can cross from here. From there, we return to the settlement of Givon HaHadasha. Avi Tzipuri is one of the settlement's founders. Like most residents, he's waiting for more details on the annexation plans from the Israeli government.
The significant things that could come out of this plan is that it can open up a very positive opportunity for us to expand our settlements for our children. And it's also good for the people on the other side of the fence.
If annexation goes ahead, it's expected to be a long process.
Greenpeace activists have covered the headquarters of Chancellor Angela Merkel's party in black drapes with a picture of the economy minister, Peter Altmaier, and the slogan, CDU, shady deals with the coal industry. The protest comes ahead of a vote in Germany's parliament on legislation to phase out coal burning by 2038.
French President Emmanuel Macron is expected to reshuffle his government in the coming days. That's after his young centrist party, Republic on the Move, failed to make inroads in local elections last weekend. Postponed for weeks because of COVID-19, the second round of municipals saw the Greens party surging and put Macron on the defensive just 2 years before presidential elections. Lisa Bryant takes a look at the fallout from Paris.
Two winners emerged from the municipal runoff, the abstention vote at a worrying 60%, but also candidates with strong environmental platforms. Bordeaux, Strasbourg, Lyon, Besançon all tipped to the Greens party, which had previously controlled only one major city, Grenoble. In Paris, socialist mayor Anne Hidalgo won by a wide margin with support from the Greens. Hidalgo's push to make the capital bike and pedestrian friendly has angered drivers, but it seems to have paid off.
Watching this election, the most important idea is ecology.
Maud Lelièvre is spokesperson for Les Écomaires, a group of environmentally minded local officials across France. She believes coronavirus and the lockdown has helped to reshape people's priorities.
It's more important for people, for climate, for biodiversity, for food.
Lelièvre also won a seat on a local Paris city council, running on a ticket headed by the centrist Republic on the Move party of President Emmanuel Macron. But overall, the results were a stinging setback for Macron. Although they were not completely unexpected, commentators say his four-year-old party has yet to secure a strong local foothold. But critics say it also reflects Macron's failure to deliver on his green promises. This, after all, is the president who has called on the world to make our planet great again. Echoing the views of others, analyst Bruno Cotres told French TV the results were a big defeat for Macron and his party.
Remember that just a year ago, the Republic on the Move thought it could dictate to other parties the terms of the conditions it would support.
C'est pourquoi, dès le plan de relance que nous sommes en train de préparer,
Macron cautions local elections aren't national ones. Still, just a day after the results, he announced 15 billion euros in new funds to drive France's green energy transition. He also endorsed many climate-friendly recommendations drafted by a citizens' panel created last year. According to reports, Macron will now take the route of many French presidents after a setback and reshuffle his cabinet. That might include changing his popular prime minister, Edouard Philippe, who scored one of the government's rare major victories, winning election as mayor of the northern port city of Le Havre. Also bucking the green wave, the far-right National Rally Party scored a win in southern France, capturing the city of Perpignan. But this is really the moment of the Greens, who say they will not be part of Macron's next government. Lisa Bryant, DW, Paris.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production costs of this unfunded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Almost all the funding this freely distributed program receives is from individual listener donations. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help me keep it going. We will conclude with Sputnik Radio. On his program called Going Underground, Afshin Ratansi spoke with Shakespearean actor Sir Mark Rylands. They discussed the opportunity to create a national nature service in the UK, like the Green New Deal, which would help the unemployment situation as well as attempt to lessen the impact of the climate crisis. Sputnik Radio.
This week saw the end of the UK government's daily coronavirus press briefings as Prime Minister Boris Johnson announced further easing of the lockdown from American Independence Day on July the 4th. But many are arguing that going back to normal is not nearly enough in the wake of the deadly pandemic. They claim we must use this opportunity to create a better world. One of them is legendary Shakespearean actor Mark Rylands, who backs calls for a post-coronavirus national nature service that would, according to the Wildlife and Countryside Link, create tens of thousands of jobs, improve the health of nature, people and the planet, and contribute to a green, sustainable recovery. He joins me now via Skype from London. You know, the mainstream media conversation, though, Mark, is we've got to get the economy going. We've got to get back shopping. Just tell me about the National Nature Service, which is being promoted by the Wildlife and Countryside Link.
We've got a massive amount of jobless, and we've got a massive job to do in the environment. Our ecosystems are very degraded. We rank something like 189 out of 218 nations for the loss of biodiversity in our landscape. We also have a massive job to help our landscape to sequester carbon and indeed to absorb water as the oceans rise if we're to get anywhere near this target of keeping the overall temperature below 1.5 degrees centigrade. So we've got a massive job, a massive vital job to do. Let's put the two together and get to work. President Roosevelt in 1933 put 300,000 Americans to work in 3 months in 800 camps and planted 3.5 billion trees in 9 years. And that was without all this communication and technology. I don't see why we can't do it. The government has to pay unemployment benefit anyway, particularly to my profession, the theater. We're not looking at having work until April next year. Judi Dench said this today. I saw that she's thinking theaters may not reopen in her lifetime. So we've got a massive, creative, intelligent, flexible workforce just in my profession. Put them to work this autumn. If we can't make art, let's make nature. That's my thought.
Well, I'll get to drama in a moment, if I may. But you see, we had pioneering primatologist Jane Goodall on this program. We've had Angela Davis, the former Black Panther. They kept on emphasizing the environment, the deforestation that may have played a part in the creation of coronavirus. But the national, maybe international conversation is, is not the environment.
I mean, I think it's going to become very clear to everyone that our immune system, what we eat, what we breathe, what we drink, is crucial to us surviving this pandemic and others that may well be coming. And if once you get into looking closely at your own health, pretty soon you start to look at what you're breathing. I certainly in here, London, I really have noticed the improvement of the air, the improvement of the water. And about 15 years ago, I started to look at what I was eating and whether it was actually providing what it said it was providing on the label, which in many cases it was not, because of the way we use the land. Caroline Lucas in the Green Party has been working on a Green New Deal with people like Jonathan Porritt. They've been working since 2007 on the models that Franklin Roosevelt set down in 1933. They not only planted 3.5 billion trees, they also did a lot of restoring of soil. They prevented millions and millions of dollars of loss of due to fires, with new services to prevent fires. We have so many jobs to do in terms of our relationship with our environment. I don't know why any political party is not thinking about this, particularly when they have to intervene now. I know a lot of more right-wing governments don't want to be seen as intervening in society. They want a lighter touch of government. But everyone's calling out for the government to intervene now and support us and help us through this. There are other benefits, too, in my mind as well, in terms of the very important issues of racial diversity in our society. All the divides that have grown up in our society over the last few years between urban and rural, between elderly and young, between the different races in our society, a national nature service could start with diversity as its basic foundation, and we could be mixing and meeting these societies as we do works, not just works in the countryside, but also works on urban wildlife for young people who have no gardens and no access to wildlife to see how nature behaves. That would be another benefit of it in my mind. Renewable energy is now cheaper than oil. These companies have been warned by the banks themselves. They've been warned to be prepared for a massive change. And that massive change is happening. Wind and solar power doesn't need subsidies anymore. It's actually in the market as a more affordable, more economic viable solution. A tipping point is going to come. This is going to happen. At some point, we are all going to realize, oh, my God, the ship is on fire. Nothing else matters. I think probably the citizens are ahead of the broken dynamic between big business and government.
Mark Rylance, thank you.
That interview was by Afshin Ratansi on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to the international broadcast, get a global perspective. You could also listen to a podcast about the history of the Shortwave Report, this program, on Humboldt Lighthouse. Every Thursday evening, I post a new Shortwave Report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website, along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. This Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.